Welcome to another week of Backlash Podcast. This week we are going to talk to Matt Gunkel. And you may know Matt from Lunge and Lures, but he's doing the guiding thing now in Southern Illinois. I'm sorry, I want to say Southern Wisconsin, but it's Southern Illinois. And so we're going to talk to him about, well, Southern Illinois fishing. He's been putting some fish in the net. And we're going to talk about some tips, tactics, and techniques to help you catch more muskies, whether you're fishing in Illinois or you're fishing in Wisconsin or Minnesota. We're going to be able to try to put some thoughts in your head to help you catch more fish. The last time we talked to Matt was episode 196 on November 16th of 2022. So if you like what Matt has to say in this episode, go back and check that episode out if you missed it. And before we jump into, you know, talking to Brad, I do want to mention that I did fire up my Team Rhino Outdoors Muskie Fishing Podcast, and you can find it in all the same places you can find this podcast. In fact, Brad was one of my guests this month, and I put a new episode out every single day or every single Monday this month. So it was something I've been playing around with, shorter episodes, half an hour long, roughly. We're just talking about muskie gear. Yeah, I know we talked to Brad. We were talking about grenades, Brad. Then we did an episode where we talked to Gus Mandy. We were just talking about various baits. We talked rods with Gavin Falk from St. Croix. So we were talking primarily about St. Croix rods, but kind of like choosing rods and, you know, different actions and things like that. And then we also talked to Vance Kalaz from VK Muskie Lures. So there's my little infomercial talking about my other podcast. Go check that one out. And make sure you dial up the episode that Brad and I did. It was, if you haven't played with a grenade yet, I think it's definitely informational to help you, you know better on how to utilize the grenade. Wouldn't you say, Brad?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a few tricks to it. And I mean, I get asked a ton about, you know, why or what that was all intended for. And I think we covered most of it, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're looking to fish a grenade this year, go check out the episode. And like I said, you can find it everywhere you can find this podcast. So if you're listening on whatever device you're on now, you'll be able to find that one as well. It's the Team Rhino Outdoors Muskie Fishing Podcast. But enough about that. I do, since this is our first time, I believe, first time back in studio in a handful of weeks, I want to thank everybody for their support for show season. Show season's over. We are starting to recover. We've actually recovered quite a bit this last weekend. It's the Monday before release. I think, what is it, the 25th of March today. So we're roughly a week removed from show season. We've put back in stock 85% roughly of the goods that we had at the show. We still have a bunch of things that we need to take pictures of and get online. Things that we had at the show but didn't necessarily have online because it was easier to just take them to a show. So we're working our way through that. But we're well on our way to recovering and getting ready for, you know, we'll say the season. And like I said, I'm sure Brad will echo the same sentiments. We want to thank everybody for their support coming out for the podcast. Minnesota, I don't know what it is, Brad, but the folks in Minnesota, they, I mean, we don't get thousands of them, keep that in mind, but they definitely come out and listen to the podcast more so than any other place. I don't know if it's the, I don't know what it is, but it's good to get the support in Minnesota. I love it. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. We had a really good turnout in Minnesota, and that brings us a bunch of questions, right? So it kind of helps feed our guide panel to answering questions real quickly. And yeah, I'm hoping that we see that at some of the other shows.
Yeah, but well, let's not talk about that, Brad. We literally just got done with shows. Let's not talk. Let's not push through the season. I don't want to even think about that right now. I like show season. It's fun. It's great. I love getting out there talking to, you know, customers. I always have my phone out and make notes on different things, whether it be podcast topics, bait colors, baits that we should be looking at, whatever. It's great to get a lot of feedback. It's great to hear stories about muskies. I love all that stuff, but I'm definitely not ready to go back and start thinking about that again because it's a ton of work. It's fun, but it's not easy. It's much easier for me to sit at home and sell things online than it is to go out and take it on the road and try to regroup, especially that back-to-back. When we go from Minnesota to Wausau back-to-back, man, that is tough. It makes for a really rough week. I know Rich, the promoter for the Wisconsin show, let us get in late on Wednesday. Typically, we don't get in until Thursday. So we set up till, I don't know, like 7 o'clock. We got in there at like 4. So we actually had like the structure built. All we had to do was hang baits. We were out of there by 4 o'clock on Thursday, which never happens. I actually went, before we went and ate dinner that night, I went back to the hotel and took a nap because I was that beat from, you know, that turnaround. I don't get home from Minnesota until you know, 12:30 in the morning roughly, and then it's, you know, try to bang out as many orders because we usually have free shipping on show weekends, and then that's Monday shot. You got 2 days to turn your product around or get enough stuff to make it work out where, you know, we don't feel like we're shortchanging any show. So we always try to put our best foot forward at every show. And man, it was nice to get in early, and it was nice to take a little snooze on that Thursday night. That's not something I'm used to. And then it was great. I got to go on Thursday or Friday morning. We got to go and jump in the pool and swim with the kids. So it's great. Like I said, I had a blast that show season, and I'm also having a good time knowing that we don't have to do it again for another 10 months.
I can relate to that, Jeff. It's kind of funny, but most of our show stuff was sitting in the garage still, and I finally loaded that up this past Saturday. So put that away for the year, basically.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's that time. You know, like I said, it's now time to focus on new seasons, whether if you have seasons. And in this episode, we're going to talk to Matt, and he doesn't have seasons. Brad, I don't know if you noticed during the episode, hopefully his audio isn't too bad. He cut out in and out a little bit, so just a little heads up. That may be a slight issue throughout this episode. We'll see how that comes out with in the editing process.
It's always a factor, right? I mean, you never know what some individuals are going to have when we're recording, but hey, it sounded pretty good. I think we'll be okay, Jeff.
Yeah, it's technology these days, right? I wish there was a better way. This is the way we do it. It's not always perfect. We're still using phone calls, but it gets the point across. Nobody came up to me during show season and said, "Man, your audio sucks." So I guess we got that going for us.
Audio is always a nemesis. Always has.
Yeah, well, we learned it with our Facebook Live failures. I mean, that was that was a brutal attempt right there, Brad. I think, and we may try it again at some point, but I don't know. I'm thinking for show season, that's just not going to happen. If you want to know what happened on a live podcast, tune in on Wednesday. You'll get the gist of it. Yeah. Well, I just want to let everybody know, as we do all the time, we have to do one infomercial. If you're looking for gear for your next musky fishing adventures, make sure you check out TeamRhinoOutdoors.com. As I mentioned earlier, reloading, reloading, and reloading. I've been placing orders, so we're getting cranked up there, but there's no shortage of things to sell around here. So if you're looking for baits, make sure you check it out, TeamRhinoOutdoors.com. And then, as always, Brad, I'll let you talk a little bit about Musky Mayhem Tackle.
Yeah, come check us out at muskymayhemtackle.com, and we'd love to have you as a customer. We do the big bladed baits, original flashaboo baits that you see all over the place nowadays. But yeah, it's real easy. You can go right to our website, get custom baits right there, or you can go right back to Team Rhino Outdoors with a plethora, a bunch of different cool custom colors. So kind of check us out at any retailer that you might know. We're probably there.
Oh, Brad, one last thing before we do dial up our conversation. The Mayhem's 10,000 casts, it's over. Ended with a bang. It was such a good episode that I got to hear from Duff himself telling me how great of an episode you guys had with his baits, which was really awesome to hear. Very cool last episode. Go check it out if you haven't already. But Brad, I'm sure it was a great season for you.
It was a lot of fun. It definitely was. And we are about to kick off this next season by me heading south. So yeah, it's definitely something that we've both Chase and I truly enjoy, and we get to work with great people like yourself and Doc as well. You know, it's kind of funny. He called you about it, but I didn't hear anything from him. So I see how I rate.
Yeah, not very high.
So it was a great show, and we were with one of our other good sponsors, AFSO, with Bill Shepke, and it was a great shoot, and we had a ton of fun with him. And so, yeah, if you haven't checked out the season, there's 13 episodes that just came out. They're available both on KOTV Network as well as YouTube. So please go check it out. Give us a subscription and be ready for next season, because we're going to do it all over again.
All right. Well, let's go dial up our conversation we just had with Matt Gunkel.
Sounds good.
All right, our guest this week is Matt Gunkel. Many may know him from Lunge and Lures, but we're talking to Matt today because Matt decided between a full-time job, a wife, a couple kids, and Lunge and Lures, he didn't have enough to do. So Matt decided to get into guiding. So Matt, before we get too far into it, why don't you talk a little bit about your situation if people want to come down and visit you, because you're guiding down in Southern Illinois. And right now is a perfect time for people that are looking to scratch the itch. They can come on down, and it sounds like the bite's been pretty consistent, but you're potentially going to be off the water here for a couple weeks, which, you know, works out well. It'd give people time to book a trip with you and come on down and experience everything that Southern Illinois has to offer yet this spring. So let's talk about that a little bit, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Brad, for inviting me to come on for a little bit. Yeah, so last year, along with Lunge and Lures and my full-time job, I started a business called Soul Ill Sport Fishing and do muskie charters on Lake Kincaid, as well as a couple of the small strip pits that are about half an hour north of Lake Kincaid here in Southern Illinois. And then I also do striped bass charters on one of our other reservoirs that's about 20 minutes from Lake Kincaid called Cedar Lake. And the past month, I've been on the water a lot. This time of year is our typical pre-storm period. With the weather we've had, it's been a little weird having mid 50 degree water temperatures so early, and actually even in February, and then kind of just back and forth weather for the last 4.5-5 weeks, where the water temperatures really haven't really changed. Basically all spring, it warmed up all the way into the middle to high 50s in some afternoons, and then been dropping back into the low 50s, basically kind of just wavering back and forth. But you'll be able to put some nice fish in the net. No real big fish this spring, although of course we had a couple encounters, and unfortunately one or two that were hooked at on the side of the boat that didn't make it to the net, but caught some nice pre-spawn fish and had a lot of good trips and enjoyed some nice March weather. We had nice mid-60s and a couple 70-degree days, which is always kind of nice to break the ice early in the season.
Yeah, we had some beautiful weather here literally as soon as we got to the Wisconsin Muskie Expo, it got a little bit rougher. It's been snowy and rainy, and, you know, I was just talking to Brad before we podcasted here, and he's getting a bunch of snow, and so it's like March, like you'd expect for us up here now, which is weird. February was actually probably the nicer month around here, but I guess we'll take what we can get, right? Enjoy the days, because, you know, it won't be long, and it'll be summertime. We'll be looking for some cooler weather, but it's nice to enjoy a little early spring, I guess I would say.
Yeah. Some of those warm days kind of give everybody the itch, myself included. It seemed like based from the early February on, we had a lot of 50s and 60s and even some 70s the last few weeks. But the one thing that was really different here than in probably almost every year for the last decade is that we've had very little rain. We had one good rain in the middle of February, and we had one good rain this month. But usually basically we're getting like 2 to 3 inches every week this time of year. And because we haven't gotten a lot of rain, they lowered Lake Kincaid down 3 feet for winter pool, and then they raised the gate to allow it to fill back up March 1st. And so it came up a little bit after we got that rain the second week in March, but stayed clear, and we haven't got any since. And so this has been the first spring we've had in a long, long time where we've had really clear water, which has been both good and bad, kind of led to a lot better glider bite and a little bit of a twitch bait bite, but it's also to a lot more fish following. Basically every bait in the box, whether you're throwing any kind of glider, diving rise, jerk bait, twitch bait, and even rattle baits, which we rarely ever get followed on. Probably had more follows on rattle baits this spring than I've had in 10 years, really. A lot of fish that are coming up to about 5 or 10 feet from the boat, turning off with as clear as the water is. Usually can see them flash, or a lot of them I've seen just kind of seen them on the side imaging, and as they turn away, and, you know, I'll talk to the guy that's in the front of the boat or in the middle of the boat, say, hey, did you see that fish come in, or did you see that fish turn off and boil? And some guys, you know, especially some of the newer guys, they'll kind of just concentrate on their lure, so they haven't always seen them. But having some other very experienced fishermen in the boat, we had a lot of side imaging follows, a lot of fish that were turning off just before they got to the boat, which is kind of unusual for this time of year. And I put it as just because we've had really, really up and down weather, along with the fact that we've had really good clarity, 6, 7, 8 feet in some areas, which is 6, 7, 8 feet more than we usually have. Usually it's about 6 to 12 inches. And that's why some of the louder baits usually really work well in the springtime, because we do have dirty water.
You know, Matt, I heard you talk about like the water's a little lower because they typically have it drained down. You guys haven't had the rainfall, like, but you don't have to worry about the flooding issues that you get over in Kentucky, right? I mean, if somebody wants to come down and book a trip with you, they're not going to be fishing in parking lots. I believe that's the case on Kincaid.
No, Jeff, we are super fortunate. Our landscape, we do have some hills and a little kind of a hilly geography, but we're not actually in the mountains. And unlike a lot of the systems in Kentucky and Tennessee that drain giant areas, a whole bunch of reservoirs in our area. So Lake Kincaid only drains a small area. So after an inch of rain, we have a natural spillway. It's not controlled by the Army Corps or anything. So the water will just flow over. The lake may come up after a big rain, 6 inches, or after a bunch of rain, maybe even 1 foot at the most, but it'll be back down to its normal level, usually within about 2 or 3 days. So we don't have to deal with those huge, huge fluctuations and all the kind of difficulties that go with it. The only, I guess, kind of screwball that Mother Nature throws us is just normally in the springtime, we do get a fair amount of rain, basically from the middle of February till the middle of March. And that does usually leave us with dirtier water, which is why I think kind of it's always been a mainstay, as well as baits that's kind of a fast moving, loud presentation. And then the other presentations that seem to be really good are baits that kind of stay in the strike zone and are nice, easy, slow targets, whether it's like a bigger twitch bait, like a shallow invader, shallow raider, something like that. Or, you know, your regular glide baits, the 6-inch Phantom and the regular Hellhound and Hellpuppies are always kind of staples here. And kind of all the baits the boxes and boxes and boxes that I bring every year in the springtime, probably 75 to 85% of the fish that I've been that put in the boat over the last decade and a half have been on pretty much those two or three categories of bait.
So you mentioned, you know, that you have an overflow. How many fish do you think you're losing out that overflow, Matt?
So thankfully, our DNR built a fish gate. I think it was in like 2000, and our fish gate goes up. Or I'm sorry, it's like a they call it a fish gate. It's basically like a fence that's 3.5 feet tall, and it has real thin mesh. So unless the lake floods with like an exceptional amount of rain, the water never actually goes over that gate. And even if it does go over the gates, we get something like 10 plus inches of rain in a week, and it would only go over for a day or two, and then it would drain it down. So fortunately, we don't really lose it. We lose very few fish anymore. Seems like maybe 6, 7, 8 years, we do have those big rain events where the lake floods so much that it goes over those gates. Once it goes back down, the DNR does actually shock below the lake to see if they can get some fish that's in the little kind of spillway pool that's down below Lake Kincaid. I remember talking to our fisheries biologist a few years ago. I think it was last like 2011, we had a really, really big flood here. And they were able to shock some fish down there and bring them back. Since then, if the waters went over the fish gate, it's only been for maybe hours or maybe a day at the most. So thankfully, the fish they stock stay in the lake at this point.
Yeah, that was my question. I did not know that that was the case there. I knew that, wasn't it back in the day that they did have a few issues there with that?
Yes. I remember talking to Chad Kane when I moved here and when we were dealing with purchasing London from him. I asked him a lot about it, and he thinks it led to about an increase in 33% of his catches in after about 2 or 3 years. Because he said he went from like a certain, I think he said he went from something like being first 2 months of the year having something like 70 fish in the boat, and for after 3 years after they installed it, he said he was after the full, like a full last week in February, all March and most April, taking like a week of April off, he'd be closer to that 100 fish mark. And so that seemed to make a really big difference, that fish ladder. And we are very fortunate. There's almost every reservoir that I know of has escapement problems. Everywhere I fish, from Ohio, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Tennessee, you know, that even a bunch of the reservoirs that I'm familiar with in central Illinois, northern Illinois, they have escapement problems. And there's all kinds of resources that are kind of allocated to try to fix them. But sometimes when they're flood control lakes and the Army Corps controls it, the lakes are not for, you know, to keep fishing. They're, you know, they're controlled by what they want the water level to be. So they don't care if the fish go through or not. That's not really what their job is. It's what I've been told when I've asked about that over the years.
That's quite interesting. No, that's important stuff. I mean, as an angler, when you know that, and what Chad had shared with you, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that in that sense, we're fortunate. And also the question that you asked, Jeff, we're fortunate that we don't fluctuate so much that it makes it to where, like you said, you're fishing in parking lots, or, you know, you're launching off what would be like the second turn in, you know, on a road to go down to the parking lot. You're not launching off the road. You're actually just launching on a normal boat ramp. We're pretty fortunate in that sense.
You know, one of the keys of what you just said there, for the listeners that have not experienced some of those reservoirs, I can tell you firsthand, I don't know how many years ago, 20-some years ago, I went to Kentucky for the first time. And I'm looking at this access and I'm like, what is going on here? I mean, you had to back down like 100 yards, right? Well, you soon learn when you start talking to some of the locals, and I fish with Greg Thomas and Tony and whatever, and the launches are that long because of how much that water comes up. And I just say that just because I don't know how many listeners really truly understand, know that that even just takes place. But it's so wild. I mean, you could go there one year and it's way down. The next year, you're fishing the parking lots, like you're saying, and picnic tables and whatever else might be up there for structure. Quite amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think I experienced the same thing going to Kentucky. I think that's why, well, a lot of the guys that fish there are in such good shape, because they got to climb, you know, a quarter mile up to their truck to pull the boat out every day when the lake's at normal level. But I experienced the same thing at Cave Run the first time I went, as well as Lake Shelbyville. It's where Lake Shelbyville will fluctuate sometimes in the springtime up to 20 feet. I know Cave Run will fluctuate even more than that. And so, yeah, those fluctuations really change the way you target muskies. And the way people think of shallow water and what kind of, whether you call it, you know, what kind of cover or structure you're fishing, you know, sometimes telephone poles and picnic tables become the cover that you're looking for, as opposed to just your normal stand and timber and weeds, or maybe some fish cribs or something like that. So the reservoirs that really fluctuate are kind of it's a totally different variable that's thrown in. I do think that at times it can really make fishing exceptional if the water doesn't get too dirty, but it also, once it's starting to get pulled down, I always think that falling water makes the bite tough. And I think that here we're fortunate that we don't have to deal with all those variables. There's enough variables that make musky fishing hard enough. I think you throw those in there and it makes it even harder.
You know, Matt, one thing I wanted to ask about was, I, at a lot of the sports shows, especially I'd say like from the Milwaukee show on, many anglers in Wisconsin, they want to talk about stocking and, you know, stocking or lack of, or however you want to say it. Is that something that you guys see as an issue down there? What's the stocking situation like? I'm assuming it is primarily we'll call it a put and take fishery, right? It's all pretty much reliant on stocking.
Yep. Lake Kincaid is, from what I've read, the studies that they've done through the Southern Illinois University, which is in the neighboring town to Lake Kincaid, as well as a fishery biologist that I have a good relationship with, there's no evidence to show that there's any natural reproduction at all. So it's a, like you said, it's a completely put and take fishery. It's totally sustained by stocking. And we've been fortunate in this area, the Fox Channel Lakes in Northern Illinois, Kincaid Lake in Southern Illinois, and now there's a couple smaller reservoirs, as well as Lake Shelbyville in Central Illinois. They're kind of what I guess the DNR is calling like our showcase lakes, which, because they stock between 3/4 and 1 fish per acre, every year in our systems, they prove to be the best fisheries. Part of that is habitat and food source. And part of that is the fact that you have to put a good amount of fish in these, you know, systems that have high nutrient density and have a lot of food in them. Because besides muskies, the Chain of Lakes, Shelbyville, and Kincaid Lake that I'm spending most of my time on, there's a lot of predators besides muskies in there. We have white bass, largemouth bass, crappies, channel cats, flathead catfish. So, you know, a 12-inch muskie has something like a 10 to 15% chance to get to, I think it's like 32 inches, most of the studies show. But once they get past that 32-inch kind of mark, their only predator they really have are otters, and there's only about 4 otters on Lake Kincaid. So while I know they do eat a few of them because I've seen it a couple times, I don't think they eat enough of them to impact the population at all. And so basically once they get over that, you know, about 3-foot mark, really the only mortality they have would be aging out and or, you know, angler mortality, whether they're caught by a musky fisherman or a bass fisherman and they're hooked bad or just not handled. But in general, with the stocking numbers that we've gotten, our fishery is really healthy. We have a lot of fish. You know, we've caught some 25, 26, 27-inch fish this spring and late winter. And then there's plenty of fish in the mid-30s, up in the high 30s, into the low 40s. And there's a good class of fish into the mid-40s. We don't catch a lot of fish that are up in the upper 40-inch class range. But over the last 10 to 15 years, I've caught a dozen or so fish in that 47, 48, 49-inch class. That's a really big fish for our fishery, but every year there are some fish that size caught. And certainly, if not hooked, we see fish that size every year. So we know they're there, definitely a little harder to trick, being a little older, having been maybe a little more educated, and they've been caught before, hooked before. But there's right now a good spread of your classes from your like high 20-inch class fish all the way up to as big.
Well, it's good that you mentioned that, because that's one thing. It seems like those southern fisheries always kind of had a bad rap for size of fish. It was kind of like, you know, northern Wisconsin, you know, they had fish there, but not many large fish. And it seems like you're hearing a lot of, you know, Ohio has some really good fish in it. It sounds like you guys are getting some really good fish. So it's also, I mean, it's really good to see that the size structure of many of these, you know, musky destinations, essentially, especially the early season ones, are really starting to put some nice fish out.
Fire right now, as far as kicking out, probably some of the biggest reservoir fish of anywhere. But we still do have a good population, like I was talking about, fish into the mid 40s and a few fish into the high 40s. And every year we see them, and you know, and a couple get caught. Certainly, I think any reservoir, if you ask someone and they would look back at stats, usually our average fish is where, depending on the year, between like that 36 to 38-inch range. So like you mentioned, Jeff, that's pretty similar to northern Wisconsin, but there is that possibility of catching real big fish. And with in the early season, especially, because the smaller males do usually go shallow first. So if you're fishing kind of a shallow pattern, you're going to contact some of those smaller fish. But in my mind, extra action for me, especially whether I'm fishing, you know, for fun or by myself or taking a customer, I always think extra action, especially, you know, when the water's real cold and you get a ton of action using anyway, that's good. And it shows, you know, it shows that the future of the fishery when you do catch some of those small fish. So I don't mind it at all. And a lot of times the outsized gear that we're using in the spring, even the 32, the 34-inch fish or a 30-inch fish, fight really hard and fight really good on, you know, your downsize. They maybe throwing like a small crankbait or a small rattle bait, and they still fight really hard, and they're a fun fish to catch, and usually have a good belly on them this time of year with all the shad they're eating, even those smaller fish.
You know, Matt, I want to swing back to, you'd mentioned Shelbyville at least once or twice in your, you know, one of your previous statements. I know for a while that lake used to be like It was kind of like one of the crown jewels in Illinois, but then it also had a point there where it was definitely at one of its lower points. Is that one starting to come back now? Because it sounds like maybe it is.
Yeah, so I think that the DNR finally got it figured out. So for a long time, Shelbyville is one of the bigger reservoirs in our state. I think it's like at normal pool, I think it's like 11,500 acres, somewhere in there, with a couple hundred miles of the shoreline because of a lot of coves. And they were stocking about half to three quarters of a fish per acre in there every year. And they were kind of spreading them out in just two sections of the lake, basically like a 10-mile stretch. And they were stocking their typical 12-inch fish. And then they kind of backed off on stocking for a couple of years. That, with the lake flooding real bad and a lot of escapement through the dam. And then they went to stocking a full fish per acre, or even like a fish and a half, but they were stocking just like the small fingerlings that were like 4 to 5 inches. And that was when the fishery really kind of crashed and the numbers went down and it got really difficult to contact any fish out there to the point. It's already kind of a big reservoir and it's full of shad. So those fish, you know, they really never needed to eat a bunch of lures. There was always, you know, there's always a lot of food for them. In addition to even the shad, there's panfish and tons of white bass, and there's tons of drum in there and things like that. But when they started stocking those real small fingerlings, it seemed like they probably were just feeding all the other big predators in there, and the muskies were having a real low survival rate. And that, accompanied with a lot of fish going through the dam and being in a river, and they don't get returned once they go through that dam. And they can free swim to those bottom gates, kind of really crash the fishery. But the last 4 or 5 years, they've been putting something like 1.5, I think maybe even 1 year or 2 years, they put 2 fish per acre into the system to try to really bring it back. I've talked to several guys. I did a sports show in Tinley Park, which is Chicago, in the middle of February this year. And there was a guy, Shelbyville, right next to me, and I talked to him quite a bit, and him along with some other people that I know that spend a lot of time fishing the lake for our species said that they've been contacting a lot of fish, a lot of muskies in like the 18 to 25, 26, 20, 28 inch range. So some of those fish that have been stocked the last couple of years are showing up. Those smaller fish do in general hang out in a lot of places that crappies and white bass hang out, because they still could be eaten by some of the bigger predators in there. So they're hanging out in brush piles and hiding some of the rocks in the crevices that a lot of crappies and white bass do. So they are being caught pretty regularly. I've seen a lot of pictures of them on social media, a lot of fish in that like low 30 or high to mid 20 inch range, like I was mentioning. And so it seems like probably in 3 or 4 years that there should be a bunch of those fish should be basically up to like low 40 inch class range, and there should be a bunch of fish in that middle 30 inch class range, and hopefully the fishery will get back to being one of the better ones in Illinois, because at one time, like you said, it was probably the most well known and probably the best musky fishery in all of Illinois, and they were holding PMTTs out there. There were some years where there were really a lot of fish caught, both in the spring and the fall, and you know, there was kind of a really famous trolling bite in April. Guys caught fish. Guys had really, really crazy number of days, up to like 20 fish. You know, if you hit it right at the right time. I experienced a little bit of that. We never had any 20 fish days, but we had a lot of days where we had 3 to 5, 2, 3, 4, 5 fish trolling in kind of the southern area of the lake in that April time range. And it's a fun lot to fish because it's just all standing timber and lay downs, and there's no weed down it, so there's different like bottom tinted that you can fish. There's a lot of big coves. It's a lake that I've always enjoyed fishing. I just haven't spent very much time the last 4 or 5 years, because catching a muskie out of there feels like you're even chasing more of a unicorn than usual when you're muskie fishing.
Yeah, I experienced it, man. This was a while ago, but it was probably like during, like, right at the beginning end of that, or the beginning of that crash. So not quite, it wasn't quite to where it was at the bottom, but it was definitely on the downfall. But Unfortunately, I went there in March and I had the kiss of death. They had like 85 degree weather coming off of, like, you know, your typical March where it's not 85. And yeah, that just did not help us out at all. We managed to spend, I think, 2 days there, cut the trip short because, you know, the water temperatures were where they were at. And we were just beating our heads against the wall. But definitely a place that it's great to hear that it's coming back because, like I said, I had heard a lot of great things about it previously. And, you know, it's just nice to have more and more, you know, places for muskie anglers to kind of spread out.
Yeah. Shelbyville, hopefully in a couple of years will be another good option. That's just the lake that I've always loved to sneak up to. While they're usually their water cools 2, 3, 4 weeks before ours does in the fall. A lot of times the cold fronts that come through in August or early September, sometimes they don't come down as far south as I live. Kind of the same latitude that Lake Kincaid's on, is we're about 2.5 hours straight south of Shelbyville. And so our weather's a little bit different. But for people that live in Milwaukee or Chicago, you know, northern Indiana, Shelbyville is really a pretty easy, you know, a really good early season option because it's only about 2.5 hours from Chicagoland. So that's why I put it at like 4 from Milwaukee. Kind of the same 2.5, 3 hours from Indiana. So there's a lot of options to stay there. And as the fishery continues to get better, it'll be kind of coming to play a lot. Basically, you know, the end of March, beginning of all the way through April, there's a good bite there. Hopefully that materializes again as the population gets a little bit bigger.
Yeah, it's great to hear. You know, like I said, a lot of fisheries up and coming still, and it's, like I said, more places to fish, the better. It's great to hear that. It sounds like, you know, Illinois DNR is doing, or whatever, however they want to call them, the ILDNR or whatever they are. It sounds like they're doing a great job trying to, you know, make as many musky fisheries as they can, and it sounds like they're doing a great job. So that's awesome to hear. You know, we've kind of laid out the landscape of Illinois fishing. You know, those are the places that you want to fish. Let's talk about, you know, tactics for these places. You hear about rattle traps all the time. Is that predominantly what we're still throwing this time of year, or can I come down and throw a pounder?
You can. If you want to throw it in the timber, you might need it. You might be going home with need boats in possibly, but you could throw a pounder if you wanted to. In years past, throwing some small rubber has worked. This spring, it didn't really work for me, but I know guys have caught some fish on like the regular set bulldog in the light version, as well as, you know, your typical swim baits. And I put a little bit of time into fishing swim bait this spring, as well as kind of tossing around a shallow rig too, which is something I've caught fish on in the years past, this time in the early April. For me, it was pretty much all rattle baits, our regular 1 ounce rattle and shad. We had a couple fish on the smaller rattle baits, like a 3/4 ounce Bill Lewis. Basically, every bass and walleye company make a 3/4 ounce rattle, you know, rattling type rattle trap bait anymore. My favorite has always been this, the original 3/4 ounce rattle trap. I'm going to go with that smaller downsized one, and then just glide baits and twitch baits. Nothing real crazy as far as patterns. Just been something that is, you know, stops and starts and kind of stays in the strike zone for a long time, or going fast with a rattle bait. As I was mentioning right before we started recording, because we haven't had a lot of rain this year, we have really clear water, and usually with rattle baits you don't get a lot of follows. But this year we've gotten more follows than I can remember in probably a decade. On rattle baits, and we've gotten a lot of follows on twitch baits and glide baits, and a lot of fish boiling on them. Unfortunately, not as many fish that have boiled on baits have came away or ended up in the net. A lot of just lightly hooked fish that shook off real quick, or fish that just never got hooked up.
So I got to ask, Matt, why is it important? I mean, you said slow and steady, and then with the rattle bait, it seems like speed is really a big factor. Why do you think that is?
For my opinion on the rattle bait is kind of just for one, it's an efficiency bait. So if someone in the front of the boat is throwing a rattle bait on what I would consider to be like a correct setup, so like a lighter 7.5 to 8 foot, I always kind of, my head meaning is like a 7 10 swim bait rod. So it's like a like a little bit lighter than a medium, kind of like a heavy action swim bait bass rod with a higher speed, smaller reel and 50 pound braid to where you can bring something in. I usually like a retriever like about 30 inches per turn. You can probably make three casts to one compared to someone who's fishing like a twitch bait or a glide bait, or even like, you know, slow pumping, say a small Medusa or a bulldog or a tube. And even though they're both highly effective baits, I think the drawing power of that glide bait and twitch bait or a little rubber bait is definitely, fish will move a lot farther for them and they'll come up higher in the water column and beat them. With the rattle bait, you make a lot more casts. So I think you have a lot more chance of putting the bait right in front of their face. We're fishing a lot of sand and timber in the early spring. And I think that just the fact that you can bump them and make that bait roll off and maybe look vulnerable or just kind of get a reaction and kind of trip the trigger of a muskie, even though it might not have been a fish that was active at all. Just the way that bait made, you know, collided with a piece of timber. I can't tell you how many times I've ran through timber and then my bait, either my line goes totally slack or reel in and it just feels spongy. And what happened was that bait rolled out. And so I kind of lost the wiggle of it and the fish ate it as that bait right as it came off of the timber. Happened a couple times this spring to me. And so I think it's that reason, along with you make more casts and you can move it fast. And just the fact that I think that sometimes we had this quite a few times this spring too, is that it just kind of annoys them. I think that, you know, I can hear it even pinging off a fiberglass boat. When you're in an aluminum boat, you can literally hear that rattle. Sometimes when you're in shallow water, you can hear it the whole way back. It's really loud. It's got to really hit their lateral wide hard. And I think I just think it really annoys them. We had several fish, even two yesterday, that basically rammed the bait so hard that they actually fouled the rattle bait on the wire leader and no hookup. And from what I've seen in the past, when I've seen them do that and not get hooked up, is they actually swat at it with their head and not even have their mouth closed. So that's kind of what makes me believe that there is times when they don't want it in their area, or they're just very much annoyed with that bait. And as I've heard an analogy, like you repeat it pretty good. Fish don't have hands. So when someone's in your way or a bug's in your way, you just kind of slap at it. I think that's the same thing that fish do sometimes. They don't have hands to knock something out of the way. So when they're normally in nature, they'll suck, you know, they'll bite it or suck it in, crush it and spit it out. But us as anglers, when we have baits with hooks on them, when they try to slash at it or bite it or suck it in, they're going to get hooked and hopefully we're going to catch it.
I like that analogy. Have you tried like the little swim whiz or believers anytime doing that same kind of bite?
We actually have a pretty good jointed crankbait, whether it's swim whiz, believer, jointed depth raiders. I've worked in the past in some of the deeper timber. I haven't had much success on it in the colder water. I have tried it, both the jointed and solid and the straight versions. And I have not had a lot of success on it when the water's under about 60. But it seems like once it goes over 60, it seems like it's a pretty good pattern. I know that years and years ago, that was one of the patterns that was pretty popular. Chad Kane kind of probably made that pattern popular. Well, back about probably 20 years or more, maybe 15 years plus, all the fish in Lake Kincaid were stocked on the north end. So that would be the headwaters of the lake. There's two creeks that fill a lake, Little Kincaid Creek and Jonathan Creek, and they actually come together just like a quarter mile into the lake. So that lake is that's the end of the lake that's the dirtiest. But like I said, for the longest time, that was where all the fish were stocked. Well, that believer pattern that I think you're referring to was kind of made famous because the believer is one of the loudest, most obnoxious baits. And Chad and his clients, as well as a lot of other people, did catch a lot of fish on those jointed believers in those years. But my thought is that the reason it was before the rattle baits were kind of discovered on Cape Run about 20 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. And that was like the loudest, easiest bait for and for an active muskie to zero in, because that part of the lake in the springtime is basically always muddy. Even this year where we've had, you know, very minimal rain comparatively, I was up there fishing because they do still stock a portion of the fish up there, but they don't stock like 100% of the fish that went in the lake. Now they stock, I think, a third of the fish, and they stock the rest of the fish in two other spots, the marina and one of the other launches on the south end of the lake. So there's less fish in that general, or less fish that would come back to that general area, but the water is still very, very dirty. And over the years, I think that the rattle bait has kind of replaced that joint of leader. I think it's a little more efficient with the little smaller, lighter wire hooks in cold water, as I'm sure you guys both know and have experienced. You know, you get a lot of fish that kind of nip, whether it's cold water in the springtime or cold water, you know, again in the fall. Fish that don't come to an activity level to where they're totally yelling baits, sometimes they're just nipping, especially on shad based waters. You see a lot of fish like nipping lightly. But that's kind of a long answer to a simple question, but I guess the base premise really found that pattern to hold and more very well. But once it gets a little bit warmer, we do have a good crankbait bite.
That makes good sense. I was just kind of curious if you had played with it too. I know that Chad did it years ago, and so yeah, you highlighted everything I was looking for.
Very good.
You know, Matt, for people that don't know, we might have talked about this already too on this podcast, is like, what type of boats do you need to fish Kincaid? Is this something that you're almost every angler with a boat can come down and fish? I mean, we'd prefer they come book a trip with you guys, right? But if they decided to go at their own, is it something you got to have a Ranger like Brad's got, or is it something you can just take a little John boat or any type of deep V?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jeff. So I could add a bunch of that. So I fish out of a regular 18 and a half foot bass boat. I certainly think that a glass boat sits a little bit better in the wind, a little bit easier with boat control when you get into some of the dense timber that we have. But I mean, I have friends that fish and everything from, you know, like a 14 foot bottom John to, I had a buddy that was down this past weekend. I was giving him kind of a hard time. He has a 24 foot Pathfinder, which is a big bay boat. And he was bumping around the timber in that boat. Scott from Shawnee Expeditions, who I work with, and we talk together on the water. We're good personal friends as well. He's got a 620. So, you know, you don't need a real big boat. Certainly you can run a big boat and launch a big boat, no problem. But you don't need a big boat to come down and fish. A lot of guys come down and fish in, like I said, John boats. In our general area, we have a lot of 9.9 lakes, but Kincaid does not have a horsepower restriction, but a lot of the lakes around it are 9.9. So there's a lot of locals that have 14, 16, 17 foot John boats with smaller motors. And there's a couple different launches around the lake. So if you want to fish one section, don't have to run 6 or 7 miles to get to the next section of the lake, you can launch either place. But you could run any boat you want. In the summertime, there's some boats that actually make me laugh. Sometimes you think you're in South Florida, but I mean, I even see center console that are in like the 28, 30 foot range that run around the lake. Certainly that wouldn't be something that you'd want to come down to musky fish in. But yeah, you could put a big boat in the lake and you could fish just fine, or you could fish in a smaller John boat, or even I see guys in kayaks fishing all the time as well. Not as many musky kayak guys, but I do see a few, and I have helped a couple over the years that weren't really prepared to catch a musky because they were bass fishing or something else, and that net up for them and help them with it. So Kincaid's about 2,750 acres, and it's about eight and a half miles long, depending on where you kind of measure from. But there's, like I said, there's a couple different launches. And there's a bunch of different areas in the springtime that you're going to fish from the north end of the lake all the way down to the south end. So size of boats, not really restrictive. One of the areas that we catch a lot of fish in is right where you launch your marina, because they do stock fish there. So you could any boat that you have, as long as it floats, will definitely work.
Well, that's great to know. I want to back up a second. We talked about rattle baits, and I know for sure we've talked about this, and it drives me nuts every spring we talk to somebody in the South to talk about rattle baits. And I just want to know, why has this never taken off in the North? I know for sure Brad would never pick up a rattle bait in any time close to the Minnesota opener. He's going to grab the biggest bait he can find. But I know that lots of musky anglers in southern Wisconsin, they're fishing, you know, sometimes pre-spawn. This year, we may or may not be fishing pre-spawn fish. I mean, 2 weeks ago, it looked like we're going to have early spring. Now, it doesn't necessarily look like that. We're going to even out a little bit. You know, why is this technique never taken off, Brad? I want to know your insights on it as well. I mean, it should, in theory, work. It's the size of a panfish. It kind of even has that panfish profile, which is in just about every single lake ever. Like, I don't understand it. Why more anglers are not utilizing this when you guys go down there and crush on it?
I think Matt's already answered that question, honestly. You know, you're looking for that reaction bite. And with the dirtier water and so on and so forth, and not that you can't find dirty water in Minnesota or Wisconsin or wherever else you fish, but honestly, I think it's more of that reaction style of bite. And I don't know that we rely on that type of bite.
I mean, you could be, Brad, but let's just use like the Wisconsin River, for example. Those are dirty bodies of water. Why nobody using it on there? I mean, you'd find the same kind of opportunity there, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're making a solid point. I just don't think it's been utilized. I've thrown them. I've played with them. I've had that bite down on the cave in Kentucky. So I've experienced it. I have some in my tackle box, but I don't know. It's just one of them things for me personally, and it's not a very good excuse. You hit it on the head. I like throwing something different than everybody else, and that generally tends to be a bigger bait.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guilty of it. I don't ever throw them. I mean, I should, you know, like when you're up there and you're down south, it doesn't matter wherever you are. And like I said, I fished the Wisconsin River early season plenty. If you're looking for dirty water, it'd be a similar situation. It's always funny to me, like how regional certain things are, you know, how regional certain baits are, and it doesn't spread to everywhere, you know, and it's just, I don't know, it's strange. It's much, you know, we'll use the same thing, the reverse with you, Brad, though. You know, you're throwing big baits early season, not many people are doing that. How come more people don't do that too?
Yeah, I think you're right on track, Jeff, but it is weird. I can't really answer that whole thing. Here's the weird part, though. If you start really thinking about it, I guarantee you there is somebody doing it, and they're having success with it. And maybe Matt knows about some of those people. So there's a lot of good little secrets that are kept in this industry, that's for sure.
Yeah, I won't lie. I mean, some of the best musky anglers I know, you don't know them on social media, right? Just because they're out there, you know, doing their thing on social media doesn't mean that, you know, those are the only guys out there, only anglers out there catching, you know, muskies. It's, you know, there's obviously some very well-kept secrets. I mean, Brad, you know, you and I have a mutual friend, and he's a fantastic muskie angler, probably one of the best I know, and you don't know it at all, probably. You would, because you know him, and I would, because I've seen some pictures, but nobody else would.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I've met some of those people, right? You meet them at the access and you know they're being successful, right? But the general public's never going to know. So it's a weird deal. And I fished the Wisconsin River quite a few years ago. And we didn't do the rattle bait thing, but we did use loud crankbait. So kind of on that same premise that we were talking about with the believers and such. So they have a time and a place, right? And I wonder, you know, you're making me think now a little bit, had we done that? I'm talking 15, 20 years ago, but had we done that, would we have experienced something different?
Yeah, I'm going to get an email now from somebody that's like, hey, how come you're trying to expose my pattern? I've been catching them on rattle baits early season in, you know, southern Wisconsin for the last 20 years, and you just ruined it for me. But
that's how it worked.
Yeah. Matt, you know, I mean, you guys are at a bunch of shows and you guys sell them. I'm not asking for names of customers. I'm just curious. Do you have customers in Wisconsin that buy up a bunch of these things, or Minnesota?
Yeah, we do send them. We do send them Nora. I was going to piggyback at least a little bit on what my opinion is on. So I think part of my experience with the rattle baits, because I spent a really lot of time fishing them in fall, winter, and spring. There's kind of some select time period that they work even basically in the cold water period, whether it's late fall, some areas in winter and the spring, I've found that they are, in my opinion, they're the most effective on shed-based waters, but they do work other places. And I think a part of that they work, the reason they work so well on our flooded reservoirs is because we do have some darker water. Brad, you know, Brad mentioned, he's been to Cave, you know, that they have that dark green, get that muddy green water a lot most years. And it does seem like they're much more effective when you have a pretty good stain. I mean, I've caught fish out in clear water. And I think, but also with the seasons are closed in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Canada and some other areas that have a lot of clear water. You guys, your water temperature is usually at the high range or a little bit over, where I would say rattle baits are the most effective. In my opinion, they're most effective from about high 30s, you know, 40 degrees up to about 55. They work past that. I mean, I've caught fish on them in 60, 65, 70 degree water. But once it gets over, steadily gets over, you know, 55 or into the, you know, definitely when it gets over 60, it seems like their effectiveness really decreases. And so, you know, usually when you guys open her, you're usually somewhere in that 60 degree range. I know if you had a real cold spring, you guys still probably fish pre-spawn fish. And the other thing is I think that's part of the rattle baits being really effective is that you can run them kind of right past fish's nose, because in general, when you're fishing the rattle bait patterns, you're usually fishing less than 10 feet of water. I caught some, you know, sinking them down in a little deeper water than that. But the general, like, idea of the pattern is that you're fishing like a slower sloping bank, dirtier water, and you're burning it. So you're putting it real close to those fish's heads. A lot of the fisheries that you guys have, at least some of the ones that I'm with in Western and Northwestern Minnesota, you're on like deep, clear lakes. The muskies, by the time opener is, you might have a little bit of, I know you have a little bit of shallow water pattern, but you have a lot of fish that have already either moved off to breaks or moved off to open water. And so casting a real small bait in a real giant area in general is not quite as effective. Now, all that being said, you know, we get pictures. I know Grant always kind of tells this story. He had a couple ladies that bought a bunch of them. They were going to in the woods with their husbands, and they told them there was no way they were throwing, you know, big bucktails and big top waters and twitching, you know, 10-inch jakes and 9-inch grandmas for a week. And they wanted to throw, you know, number eights and little bucktails and some rattle baits. And the wives caught as many fish as the husbands did over the trip, fishing little tiny baits, just going fast. So they definitely do work. I know over the years, Joe Bookers wrote kind of quite a few articles about like fishing Northern Wisconsin opener with his style rattle baits, which is real similar to the one that we make as well. And so there's definitely some bites with it. I think that if you talk to a lot of bass anglers in your guys' area or walleye anglers that are fishing in April and May, or fishing in April or early May before your guys' season's opener, you'd probably hear that them are running into muskies, because that time of year, you know, the walleyes and bass are going shallow, and there's still some muskies that are spawning, or muskies that are going up to start the process of spawning. And so they're shallow as well. And they definitely would catch some muskies on some like those ripping wrap style baits, or just like a straight up, you know, straight movement bait. I don't know if you ever heard that, just talking to, you know, other multi-species anglers, but I've definitely heard it a lot over the years. And it's just a time of year where either you're not targeting muskies, or in the case of Minnesota and Wisconsin, legally can't target muskies and shouldn't, especially on naturally, you know, just lakes that have natural reproduction. You guys ever hear or think of any of those things?
Well, absolutely, Matt. I mean, we have bass leagues almost every night on the bodies of water that I fish on. I mean, if you wanted to be in a bass league, you could do it 7 days a week. So those guys quite often either get bit off or have pictures of muskies that they've caught during that league night. And so it's a pretty common thing, right? And sometimes it even poisons some of those bass guys, where they actually become muskie anglers. So, but no, you're right on. I mean, I think we're all probably guilty especially maybe here in this state, for always throwing oversized baits, and there's a time and a place for every bait. So, you know, in locations, think about locations that most of the bass anglers are fishing. It's probably not always the same areas that we're going to fish as muskie anglers. And then some of them are pounding docks. So many guys pound docks for muskies. I know there's a few, don't get me wrong, but ultimately it's not like the area that most anglers are going to pursue. So you're not wrong about any of that. And I do think that, you know, it's worth time in exploring with that bait. So definitely something to ponder on.
Yeah. I mean, I know right now there's anglers up on Green Bay that are catching muskies. I saw a couple pictures of them recently. And I know this is a while back now, but it was early season. I was walleye trolling. I think one of the biggest muskies I ever got out of there was caught on a number 5 flicker shad. We had no muskie net in the boat, so I got to try to hand land what I think, I want to say it was like 49, 50 inches. I don't remember what it was. It was a big one. Hand land it with the number 5 flicker shad. Managed to get it. I don't know how. Played it out for a little while, but, you know, so definitely the small bait thing right now is for sure working in areas where you can't target muskies.
Yeah, you hear a lot of, and there's, like you said, Brad, there was a bass tournament both Saturday and Sunday when I was fishing this past weekend, and there's already been a couple other weekends in the past that we've had at least one tournament, and this early in March, it actually is earlier than normal, but it seems like there's more and more bass tournaments and bass leagues Tuesday and Friday nights, and then it's like every weekend. So I think there's kind of a happy medium. Part of it with small baits is that there is a time and place for small baits, and not as many muskie as throw a small bait, but also the fact that the walleye and bass anglers outnumber us by, you know, 5-fold, 10-fold, 20-fold, 40-fold, whatever it is. And so they're going to be putting a bait in front of, you know, a lot more muskies. I don't think that it necessarily always means that, oh, wow, muskies just want a small bait. It's just the fact that there's that many more anglers that are throwing small baits. And I think both agree. When muskies get to a really high activity period, I think sometimes it doesn't matter exactly what bait you're using, as long as you're in the right area, maybe you got the right action a little bit, you know, whether it's maybe an 8-inch switch bait or whether a tiny flicker shad, you know, number 5 flicker shad. If that muskie, you know, is active and it wants to eat something, it might eat both of them. But just the fact that there's a lot more walleye guys that are out running, you know, a bunch of rods this time of year, and muskie guys can't, you know, there's no one trolling on Green Bay right now for muskies because can't legally do it. So I think it's somewhere kind of in the middle. There's definitely time and place for the small baits, but also the fact that there's a lot of muskie caught on small baits, but there's a lot of anglers that are using.
I think I can reflect back upon another buddy of mine that is more of a bass angler than a muskie. And the remarkable part about him is he proved it to me so many different times. We're fishing on fishing bucktails or whatever I might be throwing. And he is a jig guy, right? I mean, that's what he does when he's bass fishing. And he proved it to me so many times, countless times. When we're fishing, he's catching fish on jigs. And you think about that. I mean, we used to make some jigs back in the day. It's not something that most muskie anglers are going to want to use, right? But they can be very effective. I mean, you think about it, a red October is a jig.
Yeah.
So many of these different baits are basically jigs that we're using. I mean, if you really want to consider it, a bulldog is similar to a jig in a sense. So definitely that style of bait always works. And I think you can't rule that out either.
Yeah, I agree. I was literally going to say, but right, saying in my mind, right as you said it, I mean, a bulldog is just a big jig. I mean, really almost all the variations of big rubber with, you know, 1, 2, or 3 tails, 4 tails now, giant curly tail grub, which have been catching every species of fish since I think people started making lures. It's the bulldogs and the medusas and all the other different, you know, variations of rubber baits made now are just kind of that, with a little longer cylindrical body that maybe you can pull harder, or they sink faster, or they push a little bit more water. I think they're all kind of that same concept, and they just, in general, they go up and down a little bit. just like a jig would. And jigs catch everything. There's no doubt about that. Freshwater, saltwater, every fish that swims will eat a jig.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Matt, before we let you get out of here, because we're getting to be about that time, you got any trips planned this year, you know, like personally, that's going to get you out of Illinois? And like, what are you looking forward to out of this season, I guess?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward. I haven't went on a muskie trip for a couple of years. And the last one I went was it was a long trip just for a couple of days. But coming up at the end of September this year, I'm going to the French River with my buddy Brian Clark, who is in Pennsylvania, along with a couple of our guys. And I think it's going to be a group of like 6 to 8 of us, depending on who all could commit. We're going to the French River for, I think, 6 days and 6 nights. We're going to be about like 5 or 6 miles from the mouth of Lake Nipissing. So we'll probably fish Nipissing as well. I've never fished either. Brian's been there once for a short trip. He went last year. He loved it and convinced me to go. I went to Georgian Bay a couple of years ago, loved it. I was there. Would love to get back. But that'll be my one big musky trip this year, be the French River. I think it's something like 18, 20 hours from my house, but it'll be well worth the drive. But with little kids, it's harder to do the long trips, especially, you know, multiple times per year. Like I used to do a lot of 3-4 trips, even 5-6 day trips several times a year, a couple times in the fall, a couple times in the summer. But anymore, it's usually just one kind of one big trip. And that's the one I'm looking forward to. Already been messing around, making some bucktails and looking at seeing what kind of other baits I need to add to the for that trip. That time of year, I think, is supposed to be a little before turnover. Oh, and the water is usually going to be like in the middle to low 60s, which kind of puts a little bit of every bait category into play, from top water to rubber to bucktails, you know, pitch baits, glide baits, a little bit of everything. So I'm looking forward to that. I've caught one Canadian muskie when we went to Georgian Bay. Netted a couple and was lucky to catch one, but love to have it come back with some pictures and some memories of some real big Canadian muskies.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. I hope you guys have a great trip. I'm sure I'll talk to you before then, but that sounds like that's kind of one of those bucket list trips, right? You know, you get out there and it's big water, big fish, you know, lots to learn. It'll be fun. I'm looking forward to hearing about that one.
Absolutely. Yep. It's probably that system that we're Nipissing and French River is one of my 5 or 6 bucket list trips for muskies, along with Georgian Bay and a couple of arcades. So I'll definitely get to give you a rundown when we get back here.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Matt, one last time, if people want to get in touch with you to get out and go fishing, or they just want to learn more about Lunge and Lures, how can they go about doing that?
Yeah, so again, Matt Guggle, cell phone number 708-710-6536. The name of the guiding business is So Ill Sport Fishing on social. I just kind of started my socials for the business. And the best way to reach me is probably just call my cell phone. And of course, me and Chris are still doing Lunge and Lures. We did a couple of shows this year. Hopefully next year we'll be able to do a couple more. Proximity and geography kind of play into that a little bit the last few years. But we were at Ohio and Chicago, and hopefully we're going to be at Pennsylvania and one of the Minnesota and one of the Wisconsin shows again next year. We'll see how kind of it all shakes out. But certainly you can get hold of me on my cell phone, anything Lunge related as well. And visit all the good retailers. Of course, Team Rhino carries the widest selection of custom colors in our line and pretty much every other husky company bait line.
Yeah, and I think did Chris clue you in? We got a few new colors coming from you guys eventually. I think we knocked out those.
Yeah, I think there's like 4 or 5 new ones.
I think there's something like that. I don't remember. It's been a while, actually. Usually Chris is really on top of getting that stuff, you know, hammered out fast, but it's fine. I got plenty to do and plenty of baits to sell, but it'll be a springtime release.
I think those should be done at the end of this month, so you should have them probably a little after Easter.
Sounds good. All right, Matt, I want to thank you for taking your time out of your day to talk muskie fishing with us. And, of course, we want to always thank our listeners for putting up with us for another episode. And we will be back with another one again next week, Wednesday.